Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's Turning Towards Life. We are very glad, as usual, to be here and to be bringing this wonderful source by Rebecca Solnit. So we are, both Justin and I, in a day of the last day of our year-long programme today. So we have both exited the building, as it were, in a break that's being had by the students to do this. And it's a lovely feeling to feel, Justin, that life goes on even amidst the beauty and kind of intensity of that completion of this year. And I'm really glad to be bringing just this source that you've chosen, because it feels really aligned with the beauty and the love that we're in the midst of in this program right now. So thank you for bringing just this.
You're welcome, Lizzie. Hello, everyone. I'm very glad to be here, as I always am. I think this is our 90th week.
Woohoo!
Woo. Which is only important because we happen to have, you know, 10 things, that it's a multiple of 10. But it feels to me like just another way of recognizing what it is to be in the midst of a path of practice together. Mm-hmm. And we were talking this morning on the, as you know, Lizzie, because you were there on the closing session of our professional coaching course that's still ongoing, and talking about the power of practice. And our very dear friend and colleague Nina was telling us about a coaching client that she worked with who took up the practice of just a very simple practice in his life of making a cup of tea for his wife as an expression of love, and how much that changed for him in his life. And we were talking, and I've been feeling and thinking into how it is that it's our practices that have us be the kind of people that we are. It was very, very touching to hear Nina talk about how it's the act of loving that has us be someone who loves. You can say I love, but it's only when we actually start to actively love that this happens. So that, I know, is what Turning Towards Life is an expression of. And it's also the case that this source is an expression of. And it's also the case that the professional coaching course that we are concluding this year's program today is an expression of that too. So I'm having this conversation with you from the venue. There are people walking around, in and out, all kinds of things may interrupt. Who knows? We'll see what happens. But one of the things that you all can't see, that Lizzie will know, is that in front of me, through the glass windows, right ahead of me, is a room where the 15 people who have just certified as integral coaches as a result of being on our program are deeply engaged in a process of speaking with one another about how the year has been, but also what has been born in them. And it seems to me that that's what love does, is love is what gives us the capacity for something new to be born in us. So it's very joyful to bring this source from Rebecca Solnit, whose work I love. And I have not known her as a storyteller before, but she's published this book called Cinderella Liberator, which is a retelling of the Cinderella story in a way that addresses some of the big questions of our time and is squarely aimed at, I think, her wish to bring into the world of stories that reach young people something that can stand for possibilities that are much called for. So this is a little excerpt of that. Perlita was doing her best to pile her hair as high as hair could go. She said that surely having the tallest hair in the world would make you the most beautiful woman, and being the most beautiful would make you the happiest. Paloma was sewing extra bows onto her dress because she thought that surely having the fanciest dress in the world would make you the most beautiful woman in the world, and being the most beautiful would make you the happiest. They weren't very happy, because they were worried that someone might have higher hair or more bows than they did, which probably someone did, usually someone does. But there isn't actually a most beautiful person in the world, because there are so many kinds of beauty. Some people love roundness and softness, and other people love sharp edges and strong muscles. Some people like thick hair, like a lion's mane, and other people like thin hair that pours down like an inky waterfall. And some people love someone so much they forget what they look like. Some people think the night sky, full of stars at midnight, is the most beautiful thing imaginable. Some people think it's a forest in snow. And some people, well, there are a lot of people with a lot of ideas about beauty and love. When you love someone a lot, they just look like love.
But there isn't actually a most beautiful person in the world, because there are so many kinds of beauty. Some people love roundness and softness, and other people love sharp edges and strong muscles. Some people like thick hair like a lion's mane, and other people like thin hair that pours down like an inky waterfall. And some people love someone so much they forget what they look like. Some people think the night sky full of stars at midnight is the most beautiful thing imaginable. Some people think it's a forest in snow. And some people, well, there are a lot of people with a lot of ideas about beauty and love. When you love someone a lot, they just look like love.
That's really something to hear you read that, Lizzie, and the line that gets me every time. All of it feels very true to me, and there's much that we can talk about it. But that people can look like love. And that how people get to look like love is the way we love them, to me, is the most important part of this. It addresses what love is in a way that totally cuts through the conventional narratives we have about what it is to love, as if loving were anything to do with what we get from that which or whom we love. It doesn't actually come that way. Love is, this is like making a cup of tea. It feels so true to me and so easy to forget that love is born of the way that we orient. And when we orient from love, actively, purposefully, intentionally, we find that what's in the world and who's in the world is love returned. I'm feeling that particularly today because we're in this day of completion with a group of people who've been wrestling and grappling with themselves and with their clients and with one another all year. And everyone looks different. But what I can see is, in a way, it might not be going too far to say that to be a human being is to be love.
It's so beautiful. I just am feeling like I'm in, actually, Justin, what comes to mind really is when we were in a circle together today and you were doing your wonderful way of loving people. And then we had a song that we played, which was about love, a song by Nick Cave. And that song called Into My Arms that you played is such a moving song to me, and anybody listening, have a listen. It's just so beautiful. When I then turned to look at you and felt the love towards you that I feel, genuinely, you did look like love. You know, there was like a feeling of there being nothing no barrier to the feeling, like what your shape of your face is, or the fact that you've got eyes seem to be like less gross, and the subtlety and the power of like loving someone felt very like I was really in that. And I feel so grateful for Rebecca Solnit for rewriting this story in this way that helps us ungrip ourselves from the notions that may ordinarily in our culture have me reference love in a particular way, and that forgetting someone, what someone looks like, is just feels very true to me. It becomes so much less relevant the more I love, whatever is the shape of someone physically, including myself, by the way. And interestingly, I got home today from the session we were at, and I realized I hadn't actually looked. I was so excited to come to this morning after these lovely 2 days that I hadn't actually looked in the mirror. And I got home, and there's a mirror in our hallway, and I kind of got a glimpse of myself, and I thought, oh my goodness, like my hair was weird, and I had a bit of makeup all over my face because I was crying, and you know, I hadn't really noticed myself visually, but I hadn't very much noticed myself in all kinds of other ways without my physical seeing eyes. And this feeling of loving beyond what we look like and beyond what anything actually looks like on the surface, but that we can sink deeper into ourselves and one another to really see and feel and be connected to one another, and to know that kind of beauty that's not what something looks like, but to experience the substance of oneself or another or something, just feels like the most interesting, rich, voluptuous realm of aliveness. And that's what I feel invited into by Rebecca's writing, and also the experience of what it means to be in our work like we are today. And it is so delicious and compelling and confronting and enlivening.
I'm in full agreement with you about everything you've said, but particularly what's striking me is this part about how we look at ourselves. Because, and Rebecca's written about this in the part of the story that we get in the first paragraphs. I was wondering as we were starting to talk, so what is it, what are the things that make this so hard? And it's so easy to dismiss this also and to go, yeah, but love, yeah, but. One of the things that makes this so hard is when we won't know ourselves as love. And I know about this, like I look at myself in the mirror and I think, oh, well, it would be better if, you know, I had more hair, or if I were younger, or if my face was a different shape, or my body was a different shape, or I was stronger, or I were. It's really super easy to get into all of that. And there are so many problems with it. So one is, it's looking in the wrong place. That's the first thing. But the second thing is it's based upon a hierarchy of value that, for the purposes of love, inconsequential. The appearance of things, of course, matters in some ways and in some places and in some contexts, but actually it turns out not at all when it comes to love. So I'm feeling into that as you've been speaking, and I'm wanting to see if I can find a way of saying that it is caught in the last line of this place, that when there's a way of looking at somebody so that we can see that they just look like love. And the way that this comes about, I think, is by starting to practice knowing human beings as expressions of love in a particular place and time. And I'm sort of wondering, and I have tried this out before as well, which is not just with the people we know, is doing things like sitting on the tube here in London on the Underground, surrounded by people I've never met. I'm looking at each person and actively seeing and feeling the way that they are loved too. One of the extraordinary things that can happen from doing that, the first thing is that, for me anyway, is I get way less afraid.
Yeah.
And the second thing is, well, maybe that's the same thing. The second thing is I can start to see that my distancing from people and my distancing from self is one giant defense mechanism. Because love also leaves us vulnerable, leaves us open. And maybe this is why it's so hard for us to do, and we replace it with symbols, you know, how high my hair is, or how many bows I'm wearing, or all of that kind of thing.
Yeah. I like it that you mentioned how high my hair is, because I kind of also think that high hair will make me happy. I have that absolutely kind of the search for voluminous hair, which my hair is not particularly naturally voluminous. So I really do get the deal that Perlita's in. And I feel like the other thing that happens is that to be Perlita and to love high hair becomes a different kind of love of high hair when that's not where we're trying to find our happiness from. So in some ways, I don't think it feels right to me to say, you know, we give up the things of life that feel like they are the shallower acts, if you like, of joyful participation in life, of just how much you love high hair or just how much you love what something looks like. But that even coming back at that with a deeper inquiry into what is happening and who we all are, that experience becomes a different one. So it's not that we're not to love high hair anymore or bows or something, but there's a way of relating to that that leaves it as a joyful thing rather than a grasping thing. Of thinking that if I have the highest hair, it's going to make me the happiest and the most beautiful or something. But that if we can shift our kind of paradigm of perception almost, it leaves us coming back to that place of high hair with a kind of joy rather than a grasping at it to make me happy or something. But it can be a simple, joyful act of loving high hair in a very straightforward way. And I really appreciate, Justin, what you're saying about, you know, practices like being on the Underground and inquiring into people as if they were love expressed in a different way each time a different human is in front of us. And one of the ways that I found helpful to do that, that feels like maybe a lead-in to considering someone as love, is just to imagine what their life might be like. Whether it's true or not is kind of irrelevant, but to go beyond, even in my imagination, to go beyond the surface appearance of someone and what bag they have and what shoes they've got on and what coat they're wearing and whether they've got makeup on or, you know, whatever the physical attributes are. But just to see if I can wriggle into my imagination to wonder what might have just happened before they left the house. Where might they be off to? Maybe they're nervous about going to a job interview, or something really difficult's happened, or they've just got married at the weekend, or like connecting in that way to inquire into their who-ness also makes me feel like everything's going to be way more all right than when I'm just focused on the surface of everything. And that we can do that. And just as you said at the beginning, like someone looks like love because of the way we're loving them. It doesn't have to be to do with anything to do with what they're saying or what they're doing. We have within us the, it's like that saying, you know, beauty is in the eye of the beholder. So we are the ones who are doing the loving, and in our doing the loving, that's how things show up to us. That's how things appear or feel, is a direct result of the way we're loving. And then I get to think, oh, like I, this is in my hands then. Like I'm not a circumstantial offshoot of the way life is or something, but that I'm part of this. I'm determining the way I see and the way that I feel and the way that I experience people. And in turn, I also think what happens when that happens is that people also feel loved. Like it's that way around, like it begins here.
Yes.
The way I'm loving. And then other people may be affected. It may not be that they're affected and they may not feel loved, but there's more chance of them feeling loved if I'm loving than if I'm not.
I think that's right at the heart. You said so many things that are right in the heart of this. One was that which we can make contact with in ourselves and others, that's not the surface appearance of things, but is the depth. There's a way in which human beings are a kind of depth always. And if we can soften ourselves enough to feel our own depth and to feel and wonder about the depth of others, it's not so hard. And so much of what Perlita and Paloma in this story have got caught up in is, when you were talking about hair, is the paying attention to hair, not as love, but as a means to the effort. If I act this way, then I will get loved because I will be. And that way just lies endless misery, comparison, self-comparison, self-doubt, all of those kind of things. You know, very mindful of... So this one part that you've been talking about, I think, Lizzie, is that we are love. But the other part is, I'm remembering as we're talking, there was a writer, I think he was a therapist some decades ago, whose name was Erich Fromm. And he said that love isn't a feeling. That love is an act. So we feel all kinds of stuff all the time, but none of them are actually love. The thing that we feel when we feel love are all kinds of things. It's joy and delight and gratitude and tenderness and everything. And he says none of those are actually love. Love is what you do. And there's a great story which is along the lines of this making a cup of tea piece that we were talking about before, which I think is told in, it might have been told in a book by Stephen Covey, and it might also be Erich Fromm again. And somebody goes and sees him and says, I don't love my wife, that's my problem, I don't love her. And he says back to this man, well, so love her then. Which sounds so easily like, oh, I'll feel love, but that's not what he means. What he means is the ongoing act of choosing to love is what love is. Like you said, it's not a random arising or something, or if I'm lucky I'll feel love. It's a way in which we orient ourselves. It's a way in which we choose to look in the world, but it's also a way in which we choose to direct our bodies and our actions and our commitments is that way. When love is only a feeling, it's so fleeting and so fickle. It's here and then it's gone. And we think, oh, well, I loved you yesterday, but I don't love you today because I'm feeling really, really angry, or because you don't look the way I wanted you to look, all of those kind of things. And it seems to me that it's one of the very particular characteristics of being a human, that we can direct our intentions in these ways. We can choose what we care about. We don't just get handed what we care about, even though our culture is teaching us all of the things that it's taught Polita and Paloma in the story. Love is having the highest hair as opposed to loving having high hair, or love is having the most bows as opposed to loving dressing the way that you love to dress. No, we direct ourselves and we practice our way into love. That's what it is.
Oh, I love this. I love it that we're having this conversation, and that it, so the effect that it's having on me as you're speaking is like, I feel again like I'm not a, there's not like facts of who loves who and like that's it. It's not that. It's that I'm involved here. And when I act lovingly, or I'm being love by acting in the way I'm acting, it's a way I can know that I'm in this. Like I'm not a victim of the circumstance of the facts of love. And I just have to like accept whatever it is. It's like I have a way, I have a means, and I feel empowered, and I feel that I can do something about things, and that because there's no staticness here, that whatever comes along in my path that I am with, I can keep choosing all the time to love and then to love and then to love. There's no absolutes, which feels very hopeful to me. And you know, that coming back again just into, you know, living a life of practice, which is one of the central parts of the PCC, the professional coaching course, it's like practicing loving, not because it's ever going to end or because I'm doing it for a certain outcome further down the line or something, but just letting it be a practice, an everydayness, a moment-to-momentness, a choice that I can draw on at any point to do something loving. It just feels like the world is filled with possible opportunities for doing that, rather than I'm already participating in a kind of fixed matrix of who loves who, and that's all that there is.
Right. It can free us from our demands that other people love us in a particular way. So we were talking earlier, Lizzie, when we were together, about wants and needs, and of course we may want, I may deeply want you to love me, and that can be true. But when love becomes a thing that we try to get, either in ourselves or from another, what it misses is exactly this dimension that we're talking about, that love is much more a path that we walk through our practice.
Yeah.
So I may want you to love me, but really what's right possible for me is the simple act of practicing loving you. That's the part that I can do.
Yeah.
Without having my want, I may want many, many things, but without having my want be the determinant of my loving.
Yes.
My role is to direct, to see you as love, and to direct love in deed and in action and in attention your way in order to love you. And then you may love me and you may not love me, but one thing that's happening is that love is here. So I get in contact with my own love that way. So it's not an abandonment or a... And I open up the possibility that our love may be mutual.
Yeah.
So often we've been talking about this a lot this weekend. The wrangles that we get into are when we play our part in making love conditional. So we go, I need you to love me in a particular way, and I will not love until you love me that way.
Mm.
And paradoxically, it's often the moment that we let go of our need for someone else to see us in a particular way, or to speak us in a particular way, or to act towards us in a particular way, that opens up the possibility that we may love them. Now, if they're acting towards us in a way that is intolerable for us, we may get out of the way, or we may ask them to stop, or we, you know, all of those kind of things are still available, but it's a separate topic from, can I uncouple, can I not have love be something I demand to feel, and can I not have love be something I demand that you give me, but instead be a way that I turn myself towards the world?
Yeah. Yeah, that's very beautiful, Justin. And I feel like in that paradox as well, I don't even know if my brain can stretch to this right now, but also the more I take my demand off the way I want to be loved, the more chance love has of reaching me. Because my opening for love, when it's my desire of the just the way I want to be loved, is so small by comparison to opening to whatever way anybody's trying to love me. And so in the act of me loving, that provides me with lovingness because I'm doing it, and therefore I get a chance to shift from this tiny little hole of you can love me in this teeny little way here because that's exactly what I want. I open the floodgates that may be there that I just haven't seen before to being loved, because I'm not having my particular little tiny window be the tiny window through which you can love me. It's much bigger now.
Isn't that a thing that when we love for the sake of love, we become way more sensitive to, open to, alive to the presence of love in everything and everyone that's already here?
Yeah.
And when we make it narrow, like a tightrope,
yeah,
which people have to come across, or we have to get across, of course it's harder for us, it's way, way harder for us to find it.
Yeah.
So this is such a rich conversation, and what a thing it is, Lizzie, to find ourselves in an ongoing conversation. And all of you who are with us, we're so pleased that you're here with us in this conversation. Thank you. We're going to end here for today. We will be back next week, next Sunday, maybe even at the advertised time, 9 in the morning. We'll see.
Thank
you very much, everyone. Thank you.
Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.